right, and that's, the feeling is that that's the best place. The pilot reacts immediately to an electronic device rather than a situation where a third party reads, he interprets something from a radar scope, and then gives his interpretation to the pilot, and then he makes the adjustment. It's a much quicker thing, and it's of greater precision to have the ILS.
If you were going to put in a system which checked the height of an aircraft over a particular spot, possibly you would say that you would check it over the highest spot or the peak of Beachmont Hill per chance, because that's exactly where they come over. That would be the point at which they would be closest to the ground in this particular area. If you put up some sort of a system that checks the height of the aircraft at that particular point, it wouldn't be a very great problem to have that in direct communications with the airport, to tell the airport, hey, this guy is really way off.
Well, to answer your question, there is radar of this type. It's not in use. No airport operator would be in a position of transmitting this type of information. It would be a decision by the FAA, and it would be a matter of taking it up with them.
How many airports do you have where an aircraft comes in solo, all right, over a particular area housing so many people in one general?
Well, there are many places where this exists, and to a greater or lesser degree. And you can fly in and out of many airports. It was mentioned here that Logan was unique in all the world. That's not exactly true. We do know that Logan is closer in than by far the majority, but there are airports that are very close downtown, and we found that there are residential areas developing right around the airport. Los Angeles is a very good example of, I would say, many more people than exist here. Midway is one. LaGuardia is one. Kansas City was one. Washington National has been mentioned. We can go right down the list of them. Dallas, and there are just many that are similar to that.
All right, Shelley, go ahead.
What I'm wondering is, I remember reading something that they had passed legislation that the planes would have to clean up their engines by a certain date. What was that date?
Well,
what happened?
Well, it's the end of the year, and they have, I just read, as a matter of fact, within the last couple of weeks, that it's almost completed, and it will be by the end of this year.
I still see a hell of a lot.
Now, well, keep in mind one thing, that the aircraft engines that were involved were the primary offenders, where the majority of them were the JTAD engine, which is used in the DC-9 and 727, which is the majority of the planes that operate in here. Now, we're confident that you will not see them essentially after the end of the year, smoke from that type of an airplane. This regulation does not apply to the Convair 880, which is operated, for instance, by the only one in Boston is TWA. But TWA is replacing these airplanes. If you've noticed, the L-1011, we've seen within the last several months fewer of this type of airplane, the 880, and the increase in the L-1011. This is not only cleaner, but it's quieter. It carries more people. It can mean increased capacity with the same number of flights. So that essentially, with the exception of some some offenders will continue after the first of the year.
Would I'd like to ask Mr. McKenna if we would just let me ask you one question after the meeting.
Sure.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Again, please, Mr. Burke. After
We're
Mr. Burke.
Talking Burke's about airports, and Logan is one of a kind. You say like that, and nothing else in the country that's so close to the big city.
No, I believe he said there were others, and he named five or six, like Kansas City,
but
Washington,
I mean,
National.
The flying over homes, you know, over people's homes.
What? Mr. Mooney said there were others like that, and he meant, right.
And they all do. Yeah, I'm set out on the West Coast there, and in Los Angeles, they have a big...
Right.
Did you ever fly to the... International Airport in Honolulu?
Yeah, I have.
You know, they
have.
Won't let them fly over the... Over Honolulu?
Well, they...
The minute they get up, they have to bear out the sea.
They have a rather unique situation there in that they have continuing prevailing winds, which fortunately permits the aircraft to... The runways are oriented, and the wind also is such that they can...
Come from the mountains, yeah.
Yes, and they can actually stay away from the downtown area.
The minute they get up, there's a big sign at the end of the runway. As soon as you get up, it turns sharp right.
Well, we have similar things here where a turn can be negotiated by the aircraft, and also where a turn results in taking the airplane away from the people. A good example is taking off on the other ends of the runways that you are bothered by, where there's a requirement that they make a left turn out and they avoid South Boston. In taking off on runway 9, there's a requirement that it goes straight out over the Point Shirley area. You may recall that not too many years ago, there were an awful lot of left turns that actually, when they took off on 9, they were running right across Beachmont. And this is not permitted any longer. They have to go straight out until they reach a certain altitude and then make a left turn.
Yeah, they were doing something like that out against the wall.
The gentleman in the rear, please, you've been patient.
I got two questions. One, is that airport going to be expanded?
Well, we're hoping to.
I came late. So are you going to expand that airport?
Well, we call it improvement, and I think the answer to your question is yes.
Improvement. You're going to expand.
Well, here's what...
And the only way you're going to expand is on land, am I right?
Well, this is land, yes. It's land now. It was water.
But you're going to take land. You're going to move one way or the other. It's going to be land, no matter how you look at it, not water. And the second one is this. How much money does that airport contribute to taxes?
Well, you mean in real estate taxes?
Well, anything.
Well, they pay a lot of money to the state through personal property taxes, the individual carriers on their furnishings and fixtures and on the airplanes. They don't pay any real estate taxes because of the reason that the Enabling Act, which created the Port Authority, stated there would be none. And this was in recognition of the fact that prior to the Port Authority operation, the airport and port, but the airport we're talking about was operated at a deficit under successive state operations over a 20-year period, and prior to that, the city. But putting that aside for a minute, even though they were operating in a deficit, and you and I, whether we liked the airport or not, whether we used the airport or not, paid for it, it wasn't competitive, it didn't help business in any way. Tourism is our number two business, and a good bit of them come through the airport. We nevertheless paid. Now, on the other side of the question, putting the law and the reasoning behind it aside, you have equity. And at the airport, there wouldn't be any real reason that I've been able to find from anyone why Massport should pay municipal taxes. I say that because the police and their barracks, the fire department and their station and equipment, the street cleaning, the ash barrels, the garbage, the sewer system, snow removal, grass cutting, all maintenance, all services which Revere supplies to you and Winthrop to me as taxpayers are supplied by Massport. And so the tenants over there are like our citizens and taxpayers.
In other words, it's losing business, isn't it? It's losing money.
No, it's not.
I speak. They're not paying anything. You just told me they're losing money.
No, I didn't tell you they're losing money.
I speak losing money.
Well, we're not. I'm sorry.
Jack, it's $1 million. Where's $1 million coming from?
Well, we have never paid any.
Airline ain't paying no $1 million.
Oh, I thought I read they did, but I really don't know.
Paid $1 million, Mr. Uncle Sam.
I see.
Taxpayers.
I see. Yes, yes. Back to.
I just want to comment on what you just said. You said that The airport takes care of its municipal services.
Right.
Back to the crash again. And you had an awful lot of ambulances and police going in there from all different cities.
That's true. And that's a part of the mutual aid program of which Massport, with its fire and state police operation, are a member of. There isn't any question, and in a more formal speech, we always mention that we are members of this and are grateful for the standby assistance, not only of Boston, but of all others. Revere, in fact, Mayor Rheinstein, I believe, was the first one to call. He was either first or second, and I couldn't tell you right now who was the second, but Mayor Rheinstein was either the first or second to call. But I had already left the office. But reciprocity is always there from us, as it is between Winthrop and Malden or Medford and Revere or whatever. And I just say that that's one of the parts of mutual aid.
What is the reciprocity?
Well, we've had it on several occasions with chemical fires or fires in Saugus or Lynn. We've been to Hyde Park in various sections of East Boston. We've been to Chelsea. So many things. I think that if we have a listing current enough, we'll send it to you. We have your address. Just yesterday, I believe, or maybe it was this morning, our state police scuba diver team was down in Dennis, Massachusetts, and recovered a body. They're doing this regularly, bodies, automobiles, weapons that are thrown overboard, the various cities and towns.
That answers the question more than adequately. I just want to, I didn't know what you meant.
Thank you.
Okay, now can I get back to my other question?
Fine.
What is the principle behind the $99,000 which you contributed to various neighborhood organizations in the last year?
Well, I think the principle is to do what we can with the people in the area, recognizing that, you know, we have a noise problem, and that's something about which we really are doing everything we can. So let's say beyond what we're doing, we can do nothing. So if we can enhance the recreation facilities or their ability to help themselves with a scholarship, which they contribute to, you know, by their earnings, you know, it's better than doing nothing or saying we have no obligations. I think all companies, all businesses, every business, I'm sure, in Beachmont Center or up on Broadway contribute to Little League or church functions or Boy Scouts or whatever, and we do the same. We do it a little bit, let's say, more, and we should, than they do. We do, I think, P&L-wise, quite a bit better.
Okay. Along that line, the greatest contribution you made was not to recreation or scholarships, but it was to a drug counseling and hearing program, or practically half of the money that you contributed was for that. That doesn't fall into what you just said.
Well, it maybe doesn't, but I think it's community assistance we're determining, and I think it's worthwhile. Whether or not there is hearing problems generally with the youngsters in the neighborhood of Winthrop or Boston, Revere included, I would presume. Yes, they are. Right, the Revere and Chelsea, and certainly no one, you know, is excluded, but it does take time. They're doing it 2 or 3 days a week. During the school season. I think it's a community gesture. Anyone that wishes to participate, I think it's reassuring if a youngster goes to the medical station and has his ears checked and he finds out they're fine. Now, he didn't have to go, of course, and perhaps most of them are fine. So maybe in that sense nothing's gained, but at least I would judge it's reassuring.
Right, so the principle behind that is not, what you said before, you said just now, community assistance, is that the word?
Well, I would say yes, I'd be willing to use that, and I'd classify that as the same. How would you distinguish?
No, what I'm trying to do is to get to the main question,
go ahead.
Which is to get back to the question of the schools. We believe that we need a new school.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that one reason that we cannot build in this land which we own is certainly because of the airport. Why can't you just give us the money, as you have given it to other people, to build a school? Maybe not pay for the whole thing, but why can't you give us the $400,000 or $500,000 with no strings attached?
Well, I think that really we cannot spend that kind of money without receiving some value. These are small amounts of money to a variety of people. I think that that comes under what we can satisfy ourselves as a reasonable corporate expenditure. Now, no strings attached is really a very unfortunate situation, because the city of Revere could have had, and I'm sure still could have, tomorrow morning, Friday morning, next Monday, that amount of money on really what are very favorable conditions. But the reason that it hasn't happened yet, and I would hope that that would vanish next week or tomorrow, is that they're afraid that some people will assume that this site here, right in the school and the others, the two others, that when they're raised or demolished, would be used for airport expansion. We're not in a position to say, here is $500,000, we'll take the buy these schools from you, then give them back to you for 50 years, because the question then arises, after we knocked them down and all, what did we spend this $500,000 for?
You spent it for the education of our children who have been deprived for quite a while.
Well, I don't agree with you on the deprived. I agree we were willing to do this. I think, and I'm not the mayor of this city or on the school committee or anything else, that the city should have accepted the authority's offer. And it really is regrettable with a generous package like that, and reasonable, and something that was requested and worked upon quite a bit, did not materialize. I hope that it still does.
You say that the reason that you can't use this amount of money is that you need to have some kind of value for what you get if you're going to spend $500,000. What value is the land where the
Howe and the Pastor and the Roman are situated? Well, at least it would be ours should a need occur. And an example of what value it was that the city entertained for perhaps 2 months or more the possibility, which was their suggestion too, of leasing back one of the buildings for storage, just, you know, storage items. Now, that's a perfectly good use for a building like this. It's not necessarily good in its location and age for the teaching of school, but for dead storage, it's perfectly all right. And I think the arrangement was for 5 years at $20,000 a year, so that would be value. It wouldn't have any value, as I can see it, for a hangar or anything. No airport-related thing. We said that time and time again. But then they say, can you guarantee that it will never happen? I can't guarantee that I'll be working with the Port Authority in October, really. I think I will, but not much beyond that I can't guarantee. So I suggested uses like for a city yard, you know, storage of the snow equipment and in the summer, different kind of things, and maybe there's some value in that. Well, I am not the mayor or the one who makes those decisions for the city. I recommended this arrangement to the Port Authority, and I was fortunate enough to have them agree to it. I hope that it comes to fruition. Please.
My name is Jim Prendergast. I represent the mayor. I work for the city hall. He's asked me to come down this evening to express regrets at not being here, and also to inform you, Mr. King, and the committee that the mayor at no time to take a position or allow the airport to encroach upon any properties in the city of Revere at any time so long as he is mayor. And he will oppose any expansion any further into the area as it exists.
He's always stated that. Did I state, as you understand it, his position on the schools or the cities? Right, thank you. All right, this gentleman hasn't spoken.
My name is Brennan, from Place in
Grosvenor. Right.
I'd like to know, out of curiosity, I think the gentleman here said that 2 miles out, they were required to be 570 feet in the air. Someone was going to work it out. I don't think they made it, but
did you do it?
I thought that when they went over here, I'm not sure this is a sliding scale, that would mean they're 400 feet over this from ground level.
No, he said sea level, but then you're on a hill.
Well, sea level. Oh, Rogan's Point is sea level.
I'm okay. Sure. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Rogan's Point is sea level. So
right. Well, I tell you what. There is an exact height that they should be.
Regulated by the government, not by you people.
That is correct. That is correct.
And there will never be any change from the height that's regulated.
There is currently an experiment going on out on the West Coast. It's called a two-segment approach, and instead of a steady, you know, glide in, I think it's higher out and then a rather deeper drop. That has not been approved, you know, nationally. In fact, it's isolated on a test basis, really, to the West Coast, as I understand it. But if the height above Rogan's Point at sea level and the hill, What I'll do is we'll get those exact heights and pinpoint spots, and then we'll write a letter to the editor, and I'll write to you and to the others that I've written down, one other, that one another.
I think the gentleman over there with the blue shirt, I could
yes.
be wrong. He seems to be working it out. I may be wrong.
Well, he was, but he might be a little weak on trigonometry.
No, I've got the numbers.
Okay, shoot.
At a 3-degree glide slope right. exactly 2 miles out, he should be at 578.6 feet above mean sea level.
Okay, just 1 second now.
Well, a mile and a half is what
yeah.
mean. Mile and a half, all right.
Ben, Julie. Is there anything I have to do? Is it all done?
We do.
Trigonometrically, you do.
Pick it off a graph.
I wish I had been a little computer to see it. Well, but it's not as accurate.
Okay. Well, we're ready to go back. Our stenographer has a stenotype. He says more ammunition. We'll get those exact heights. Rogan's pointing on the hill. Send it to you. And
I can wait till he figures it out.
Are you?
I think he's doing it.
Okay. I think you can always blame the lack of light if he doesn't come up with it. Is there someone else that... Yes, sir.
I'd like to direct my question to the gentleman on your left. Sort of a technical major. We were on a technical theme here a little while ago, gentlemen. My name is Frank Recupero. I'm a resident of Revere. I'm also an airlines mechanic with American. Now, these devices, my understanding, I don't know just where they're utilized. Don't we have a device called a transponder which aids the ATC controller in identifying aircraft? I don't know whether they're mandatory on all aircraft. We have them on ours. And we've incorporated into this thing also an altitude reporting system. And here again, I don't know whether they can use this on a low-level approach. Do you know whether they can?
Let me ask. Are you asking whether they've included this system in our noise monitoring system?
No, it's nothing to do really with noise monitoring. It's a...
Do you understand the question?
Yeah. Well, of course, it is required on air carrier aircraft. It isn't required on all aircraft yet, but there is hope that there will be. And as Mr. Callahan said, it's tied into ARTS 3. There will be certain improvements in that as time goes along on the. The system that I mentioned that had just been commissioned out in the California area. We checked on when it would be in operation here, and I'm not sure of the exact dates, but it seemed to me that it was sometime about the middle of 1974. But whether this could be utilized by the FAA to some way monitor the aircraft and advise the pilots on their final approach, I don't know.
Well, I'm still required to answer E6 items in logbooks regarding altitude reporting errors, malfunctions in this particular phase. So they must be using them at some airports. They must be giving the pilots information on their altitudes.
Well, it certainly gives the pilot be getting information from it, and but just how it might be used.
I don't know. No. That's what I was. They must be reading it somewhere.
Well, is that something you'd wish Mr. Mooney to pursue? Because we would be.
Well, I was just sort of an inquiry of my own, sort of follow up with this gentleman's inquiry.
Well, we are very much interested in this ability to not only locate aircraft in plan, in other words, the distance from the airport, but the altitude also. And. So this is part of the thing that we are following up with the FAA on.
Okay. At 1.5 miles out, Jerry, at a 3% glide path, 432 feet above mean sea level, you're about a mile and a half, maybe a trifle more on Logan's Point. So it should be 432 and a half feet above sea level. Pardon?
I say they're not, no way. That's the FHA.
FAA. Well, I tell you, we will check that. We will check that the extent we can. We'll drop you a note. Is that reasonable? Wait 1 second, Mr.
There's one point on this. There is no law that requires that the aircraft fly at 3 degrees. This is a normal approach. And where there's an instrument landing system, the regulations say that the pilot will fly on the glide slope, which is a 3 degree approach. There is a back course approach on 22 left, but there is no glide slope as such, and they have to really figure out their altitude based upon the back course, which is not as precise as the front course glide slope.
In other words, he comes in as he wishes.
Well, he's supposed to come in at approximately three degrees, yes.
Yeah.
And he has Mr. Callahan pointed out, he has a VASI, which again is something that's usable and was installed for visual flying conditions, so that the pilot, when he gets below the 3 degrees, he sees the red lights and it tells him whether he's above or below.
Yes, sir. Statement or question?
The statement he made, is that a safety device that he's talking about?
This Mr. LoCupero?
He was telling you about on some of the aircraft. Is that a safety device or considered a safety device?
Mr. LoCupero could.
Yes, it is.
Then why is it most planes don't have it? The lack of money?
Oh, no. That's a transponder that he's referring to?
Yes, sir. American Airlines equipment is all equipped with this transponder device, and it also incorporates
a safety device.
An altitude reporting device.
Well, you're saying they're all equipped with that?
Our aircraft.
Right. All airline aircraft.
Well, I don't know about the other airlines.
Yes, all.
That's what my question is.
Oh, yeah. They just said some of them didn't have them. That's what he said.
Some small airplanes do not. All large or all airline aircraft do.
They shouldn't be in flight.
Well, again, that's a federal regulatory matter, but all airlines do have this equipment.
The agency. That's what I'm
thinking. No, that's. All right. Anyone else? Yes?
There's no law that says they have to follow that flight. And it's just a regulation.
Well,
you can't find anything like that.
I would say that that is right, although every indication is that they do follow the prescribed 3 degrees to go glide slope. Well, you know, I have to agree that that's a rather forceful reminder. But what I did say, I believe, several times is that the noise monitoring step is a first step. We will be able to detect those that come in under, lower, okay? And the first thing that we're able to do, now the laws may change. It may be that in 1974 or 5 that we'd be able to do something about this. I don't think that will happen. Maybe the federal government will. We talk with the pilot and he gets a letter saying he was in and he admits it or he doesn't and it can be verified or it can't. We do what we can. But it happens a second time and I think we have every reason, without being punitive and without trying to hurt anybody, because I'm positive no pilot wants to come in lower because he's endangering himself and his job and all that, you know, his life and his passengers.
To get in.
No, to get in safely, of course, but not that nobody ever. No, oh, sure, they have schedules, but there's no penalty for being, a few minutes late or an hour late. That's, you know, aircraft are generally late anyway. Well, I mean, what can I say to that? There are planes came in before them and planes came in after them. How do you suspect that... one thing, something happened there. I don't know what happened, but I don't want to blame it on something or somebody that I don't know anything about. That's not going to help us with the noise. Did you want to ask something? You've been quiet all night? Yeah, I thought you were just stretching. That's all right. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Any
addition to this proposal of the airport expansion of the runways for one reason, for noise abatement. Would you agree with that?
Would you repeat that again, please?
The proposed runways expansion, one of the reasons for it, I don't need that. I'm sick of looking at it.
Would it be all right if I look at it?
Go right ahead. You should know if I had by now.
Well.
The noise is irritating.
All right. Maybe if it's irritating. Okay.
One of the primary reasons for expanding this airport is for noise abatement.
In this instance, yes.
Okay. What are the other measures, what other steps would the Mass Port Authority take for noise abatement procedures?
Any?
Such as sliding scale for the loud aircraft to come in and use the loading airport. Are they going to increase the scale?
Well, I hope not. I would recommend against that.
Why?
Well, suppose that we do charge a little less in the daytime, but realistically, more at night or a lot more at night. The plane will still come in.
I'm talking about the old type aircraft
Whatever it is.
Okay.
The plane will still come in, and we'll charge them more, and the noise will be exactly the same for you. Charging them more is not the answer. The answer to the noise problem is twofold. One, the engines, you know, really is the prime, and the other really is land compatibility. And I say to you very plainly that, as in the case of Neptune Road, and we have some others, like maybe Beachmont Hill is one of them, that when you're flying aircraft directly over, you know, large aircraft, right, at a level of whatever number, some people are saying 100 feet, we say it's higher, but nevertheless, flying directly over, you are going to have a noise problem. And if you charge him more, or we purchase an easement in your property, you know, an air easement, you've heard of that, or whatever, that is not going to abate the noise. If we measure the noise and say it's so
wouldn't
many...
Wouldn't that give an incentive to the airlines to phase that particular airplane out? If it's going to cost them a hell of a lot more money to land in that airport, you know, I haven't heard one constructive thing other than this airport expansion that the Port Authority has proposed tonight. All you've heard from the people is the complaints about the noise. Now, what is the Mass Port Authority going to do about the noise problem?
Well,
it isn't just up here in this hill. You know, it's many, many communities that are being involved by this airport noise. And I think that the Mass Port Authority should take a position. And that position should be to incite the airlines or whomever the responsibility is being, you know, placed on. Make a decision. Who gets the blame? Gives them the blame. We want to be, you know, have some elimination of this noise problem.
Well, how would you suggest that that be done?
I propose one
yes.
of the things to increase the, you know, yes. the fees so that the airlines themselves might want to phase out that particular thing. I, for one, would like to see a partial nighttime curfew. You know, the expansion of the, or the feasibility of the real high-speed rail. You know, there are many alternatives. And you're really not putting all your efforts into that. All you're simply doing is saying that we need airport expansion. And I don't think that that's the answer.
Well,
however, you're going to take everything that the people have said here tonight and you're going to go back and say, well, gee, you know, they didn't say anything. We're saying a hell of a lot. We're saying we want to get rid of some of this noise problem.
No.
It isn't simply by buying property and making us move. That isn't the answer. It lies in your hands, and you could do something for the people if you really wanted to do. And I'm not specifically pointing you. I'm saying the Port Authority.
I thought
that
you would.
That make you feel a little better?
No, not really.
Good.
Because it doesn't make any difference. Fault isn't the answer. I stand quite confident that anything and everything that can be done, that's doable, is being done. I'd feel quite concerned if anyone or any airport came up with a novel idea ahead of us, particularly if we didn't immediately get to it, because we have the resources, we have the intelligence and the staff
what
and the money.
What are those resources, you know? Like, what could you throw out to these people tonight to say that you're going to help eliminate the noise other than those runway expansions?
Well,
I don't believe that those runway expansions is going to be a noise abatement procedure.
You're entitled to your position.
Right.
I think you're wrong, though. But I think what I've said all night is that the way to cure this problem is not within us or you, but rather the technological advancements and the mass production of the engines that are substantially quiet. Now, the question I was going to ask is this. Do you notice? Are you on the hill, by the way?
I don't live in the city. I live in Chelsea.
Oh, well, we'll be there tomorrow
yeah,
night,
tomorrow,
maybe.
Right.
Right. Well, from somebody that lives on the hill, can they really say that they notice a difference in the DC-10s and 747 Boeing or the L-1011? Is it noticeable, like, is how, like, roughly, what would you say?
Some of them are beautiful.
Is it livable?
Right. Some of them are all right, but some of them are
together. See, even the new ones?
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
some.
It depends on how low, and also the
DC-8s
make a lot of noise.
Yeah. Well, were you going to say something, Ms. McKenna?
Why is it, I just want to ask regarding this particular question, why is it that the 1011s and the 747s make less noise than the 27s, the 07s, and DC-8s?
Well, I think that that's a good question because it reminds me to say that the L-1011, are you saying, is the least noisy?
Okay. The 47 is the least, and the L-1011 is the second least. Sound like you can hear them, and that you can hear them warming up, revving their engines prior to takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear them; they sound like a helicopter. They have a certain particular pitch, and you can pick them out from their before they even start running on the when they release their brakes.
I think the manufacturer's specifications show, and we are impartial, you know, understand the L-1011 is least noisy, I believe, and I'm not advertising for anybody.
And the Learjet should be taken off the airwaves.
Well, all right. We don't have too many of those, at least. The DC-10 the DC-10 is next less noisy, and then the Boeing 747. And it comes in that order of their development. The L-1011 ran into considerable delays, if you follow this industry at all. But as a result of that, they came up with a quieter airplane still. And I think that the next set of airplanes, the advanced Boeings or the newer 747s, some of them have been 3 or 4 years, are going to be less noisy. And that sole reason is, like in medicine or chemistry or whatever, time and research brings better results. It may cost money, it may not. Usually it does. But that's not really the prime concern at this moment with the airline industry. The prime concern is finding the technological benefits that will still make the plane fly without the visible pollutants and actual pollutants. And I think your results are seeing the Boeing, or, and all of those are much better than the 707s and 720s. So progress is being made.
Yes, but wouldn't you agree that if you had, as a landlord, and if you had a sliding scale to phase out those older aircraft now, that that would be beneficial to the people?
I don't think so.
Why?
Because it would not be anything that you could put in. Don't forget, there are still laws.
Well, you know, like tin can them. Do whatever you want with them. Just phase them out and make the airlines buy the newer type aircraft that is generating less noise.
Over what period of time?
Well, I don't know. You know, present a figure. I'm just saying that I would like you to start making some decisions on phasing out the, giving the airlines some incentive and phasing out those.
Well, as I understand your statement or question, I think you're talking about, you know, sort of immediate, 1 or 2 years or something like that. That cannot be done.
Why?
Why? What will the airline company do with the airplane? And how quickly can they get another airplane? Now, may I finish once in a while, please?
No, that's not my habit.
It's not your habit, other than tonight, here, maybe?
No.
Oh, it is your nature, I see. No. They would not, suppose that we did, which I would not recommend and I do not have the authority or desire to do, that American Airlines and the others, maybe cross that name out, someone might get nervous, that the airlines take their 10 noisiest planes that are in Boston and get rid of them, and that's the way it is, and you can only bring in or substitute for them 10 of the newer ones. They could not obtain those planes. They cost, depending on what type of plane it is, say it's a DC-10 or other, $18 or $20 million. That would be $200 million. But you couldn't buy it. It takes time. They produce so many a year. And that's what the problem is on retrofit. I think, and I said earlier, that the technological advances have been made to retrofit existing engines at a reasonable cost. I believe it's about $350,000, that's what I think it is, per engine. $750,000 per airplane, so that's $175,000 per engine. Or divide by three, it's $250,000, let's say. But you cannot take all of the airplanes out of service at once. They take out one engine, put in another, they retrofit it, and to take care of the fleet, which is about 2,200 airplanes, maybe 6,600 engines or something in that general order, it's going to take 5 to 8 years. There just aren't enough manpower and shops equipped to do it. But it's coming.
But now with retrofitting, the companies still cannot get the equipment to retrofit the engines quick enough to satisfy the people. Is that right?
It all depends how quickly the people want to be satisfied. I just said it would take about 5 to 8 years, but you will see gradual improvement because they're being done all the time.
Okay. Do you see the federal government paying for this retrofitting, or do you see the airlines?
No, I think the airlines should pay for it because then they charge the people who use the airport or ship to cargo, a little bit extra to offset. I don't think that the general taxpayer should pay for that. I don't see why he should. I think the user.
You want federal funding for your airport expansion, some of the people take that same position. We don't feel that federal funding, our money, should be put out to expand an airport that you really want.
The only place where you're not correct on that is that the money that comes for federal funding for airports is monies collected from the sale of tickets in the area. In this case, it's, say, Logan Airport or one of the downtown ticket offices from people using Logan Airport. And we at Logan, just as a matter of record, simply do not get back anywhere near the money that's collected from our passengers, that fly in and out of this airport. We have not only in Beachmont some slight problems, but in Washington. But nevertheless, it's there. It's not a program that personally we at the Port Authority advocate. I think there's no reason why we couldn't go ahead and make these improvements, but the program having been established nationally and there being eligibilities and our people from this area contributing to the fund, we do file the applications to obtain what we're entitled to.
Well, then why do you have to, if the money's there and it's available and it's purposely for airport expansion, is that right?
That's right.
Why do you have to go through all this nonsense then to get it?
I wish we didn't. A busy person like you might be able to help us and find out.
Oh, please. I'm too busy attacking you.
Well, that would be a good rest for you. I don't mind that. Now, is there anyone else that has... Yes, sir, Mr. Bergson?
Did you say before that at the airport there's a time that you slow up... operations that you don't have anybody be taken off or not landing, you have a curfew?
No, we don't have any curfew. There are times like 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I understand the lady has left. There is a plane comes in and out, and there are some, but not many at that time. You understand that, I'm sure.
What was the reference to 11 o'clock in the evening until 7 in the morning, you don't have... certain things there at the airport. What was it?
Oh, run-ups. I don't think that was mentioned. At least I didn't hear it tonight, run-ups. Did I?
Yeah, that was 11. Yeah,
okay.
Well, I'm going to keep a log.
Well, give us a call when something is happening. It's not that far away.
This long, I'm going to...
Okay.
I'm going to send it in.
Yes, sir.
I'll go back to that. You probably might know that. You can overhaul a jet engine and so forth. How about the body of a plane? They got a life expectancy.
I think they do. They do.
So many years, and then they have to get rid of it.
That's the answer to the retrofit program. You have an airplane so many years old, but the engines come in and out. You know, they're interchangeable. That's correct. So I think you understand that they have so much wear and tear, and it's almost required that they get close to the maximum use on it. And that's one of the problems. Good equipment, it's hard to disband. But when you fit it all in and take a period of time, I'm sure that's going to happen, and there will be improvements. There really will be. Well, you've been very, very attentive, I have to say that. It's probably been the most quiet, orderly, and pleasant meeting that we've had on our tour. And while that won't reduce the noise tonight if the planes come overhead, you nevertheless, I hope, understand our position. And as someone who's lived in Beachmont for a number of years in the summers and now live in Winthrop, I understand the problem. I don't like it or appreciate it any more than you have. I have all kinds of cousins living up on Crescent and Crest, and they still like me, so I hope you won't totally discard that thought. Thank you for coming, and if you have any other question you'd like to talk to any of our individuals, please don't hesitate to do that. I want to see Mr. McKenna.